This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Glink on News Talk WSB.
Everybody to the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Clark today. So glad that you could join us here on News Talk WSB. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time. My website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter while you're there. It is your ticket to all things Glink, including what's going on at CBSMoneyWatch.com, the Equifax Personal Finance Blog, Realty Joint, and all the places that we play online at ThinkLink. I wanted to, obviously, lines are wide open right now. Call in. We're talking about mortgages today. We're going to talk about travel. It is truly the travel season. There's all kinds of stuff going on with traveling. I just got back. In the last 10 days, I was in Europe, Boston, Chicago, Atlanta, Florida, all within about 8 or 9 days. It was quite a lot of traveling, and it was great to be abroad and see what kind of security measures are going on abroad and how safe I think other countries feel or don't feel with the amount of traveling that's going on and where people are coming from. Very, very interesting. But I was in Florida yesterday going through Miami's airport. And I don't know if you've gone through that airport recently. They've done a lot of work to it. But Sam and I, of course, you know, have to drink all the water before, you know, you can go through. You can take the empty bottles through and then fill them up on the other side. But you can't take filled bottles through security anymore, at least not those over, you know, like 3 ounces. And so Sam guzzled down the water because he didn't want to waste it. And then he said, I wonder if the scanners can actually see all that water I just ingested. And I said, I have no idea. And that led into a really interesting conversation about drug mules and when people swallow drugs, as they you've seen, I'm sure, on television, how that gets picked up. And then today I see that the TSA, Transportation Security Administration, is warning airlines that human bomb terrorists may try to use surgically implanted explosives to blow up planes. You know what? I guess after my conversation with Sam yesterday, I guess this isn't so far-fetched. You know, people actually implanting things into their bodies in order to blow up a plane. It's completely out of my mindset. I'm sure none of you can imagine even doing that. And the fact that they felt it necessary to issue that warning is, I think, nothing less than shocking, absolutely shocking. So what basically TSA is saying, Nick Kimball said that the warnings are part of an effort to provide greater insight into recent intelligence. And due to significant advances in security, terrorist groups have repeatedly and publicly indicated interest in pursuing ways to further conceal explosives. Now, U.S. security officials are saying that they think that the danger would come from overseas rather than domestically, but they're taking precautions. So what was interesting about going through Miami International Airport yesterday is how many layers of protection. This is the most secure security I think I've been in anywhere that I've traveled at all in the country, and I've been everywhere from Los Angeles to New York this year. I've already traveled 35,000-40,000 miles, so I've certainly had been in and out of a lot of airports. And Miami, what was so interesting is when you first go through, you go into a room and you've got the, the long conveyor belt, and you're putting your stuff down and you're taking off your shoes and taking off the belts, and all the men are like digging in their pockets for loose change and they're putting them down. And then you go through whichever way they're doing it, whether it's the X-ray one or they're just looking at the regular one you walk through, and you get your stuff on the other side. And before you can put your stuff together, there is another door, and the door is closed. And it's almost as if you literally have to step on, and it opens, the doors open, and you walk through, and then there is no way back. Once you are through that part of security, you get dressed on the other side. Because you know how they usually have benches and there's a little bit of room. In Atlanta, at Hartsfield, they have this where you go through the main one, or if you go through the T gate, on the other side, there's, you know, like those gray metal benches. They're kind of sloped into the middle inexplicably, by the way. And you sit there and you put your shoes back on and you put your belt on and you redress. You make sure your jewelry's on and all the rest. Well, in Miami, you don't do that anymore, at least not in the gate that we went in. We were flying American, and you get dressed on the other side, and then there's no way back. So I guess there must be a way if you forget something on the conveyor belt, but they don't want you coming back. And there are several places that you go through, like when you go on, you give your ticket, and then you're going to step onto the plane. You step through another one of these pads where the doors open and the door closes behind you, and literally they are sectioning off the airport to make the experience safer. I don't know if it's safer or not safer. You really feel like the doors have closed behind you and you are somewhere else now. It reminds me a lot of how customs is treated, and maybe it's because this airport does so much international travel and they want to be able to section off different parts of the airport. This happened to us at Charles de Gaulle a couple of years ago, where it was the Christmas bomber, and so when we were on our way back from Morocco through Paris and then Paris, Chicago, because we were coming in from Morocco, they had sectioned us off into a different part of the airport, and they wanted all the American flights to go through a certain much higher level of security. And so we kind of walked back and around, and we get into this, you know, there was just several extra layers of security, and you get in, and then they're like, oh, you have 4 hours to wait for your flight, and there's nothing to drink and no bathrooms in the section. Sorry. But they wanted everybody really secure and really away from everybody else. It's very interesting. And there were just, you know, I think that what TSA is telling us is we are certainly moving in that direction. And they said, well, passengers flying into the States from abroad may notice additional security measures in place. I certainly did. We were flying back from Paris to Boston, and certainly we went through more security, both on the Paris side and in Boston when we landed, than we were normally used to. 404-872-0750, what has been your experience traveling around this summer? We are seeing from AAA that something like 39 million Americans were on the road this holiday weekend. Were you one of them? Did you drive more than 50 miles to go visit somebody? I guess you can't go over the river and through the woods. I guess you can. It's summer. 404-872-0750, security that you are seeing in place or that you wish you would see. Would love to hear from you, 404-872-0750. While we wait for people to call in, let's go back to the phones. Dwight joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hi, Dwight. Welcome to the Clark Howard Show.
Thank you, Lisa. I had a question about transferring a balance on a credit card, 0% interest to another 0% interest credit card, and if there's any reason not to do that.
Well, do you already own the other card, or you're going to open it up?
It would be opened up, yeah.
So the problem with opening up new credit cards is that it temporarily depresses, or maybe it's not even so temporarily, depresses your credit history and credit score. Every time you open up a new balance, until the payment schedule is established and everybody can see how it's going to affect you or not affect you, your credit score might come down 30 points, 50 points. Now, if you have very good credit, then it should go float back up again after you've transferred this balance and now you're managing it well. But the real question is, I guess, where is your credit history and credit score now? Where are they? And how many other credit cards do you have open? Are you planning on closing this other credit card? How long have you had that one open? Because all of these little details will factor into how you keep your credit score in shape.
Okay. But really, it's just a credit score issue, mainly.
It's a credit history and credit score issue. I mean, if you're going to transfer balance and you can get approved for it and you're going zero balance to zero balance, I don't have a problem with you doing that. But over the time, over a long period of time, if you're opening and closing and opening and closing accounts, it's very bad for your credit history.
Okay.
And that will depress your credit score. And then you get fewer offers with better terms, and you're just kind of shooting yourself in the foot at that point.
Okay.
What's the plan on paying this thing off?
Well, the purpose was just to keep the 0% until early next year when we could just pay it off in full.
Okay. Well, if you've got a plan and you're going to pay it all off in full by next year, then this is a very temporary thing, because you also want to watch the percentage of your total available. It's the usability ratio, right? So if you've got a balance limit of, let's say, $10,000 and you're using $9,000 as a debt, that looks really bad for your credit history and your credit score. It looks to creditors like you're not managing your credit appropriately. But if you now have paid down this balance where you only have a $2,000 balance but $10,000 of usable credit, you know, your credit limit, that's a very low ratio, a low usability ratio, and that's very good for your credit history and credit score. So there are lots of little things that factor in, and as long as you're thoughtful about it, I think that you'll be able to, you know, achieve what you want to do. But I love that you're trying not to pay any interest, and I love that you're paying it off faster. So overall, it's a good move. 16 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. Gail joins us on the line. So, Gail, where have you been traveling this year?
Hi, Elise. I was just in Israel.
Wow.
Yeah.
They have, like, top-notch security in Israel.
No kidding.
What did you experience while you were there?
Well, I'm sorry to say that, well, I experienced two things, because I was in Israel, but we also took a day trip over to Petra in Jordan,
mm-hmm.
and that was also quite an experience. So first of all, with regard to the Israeli security, you know, they know who they're looking for, and they question every passenger, and I know that for some people that's going to be a problem because it smacks of profiling, but they're very efficient about it, and I thought it was great.
Yeah, they do profile in Israel. They think that we in the United States are dumb not to do it, actually. They've offered to guide us in how to appropriately profile
mm-hmm.
for who we're looking for, and that's not something our government is taking them up on.
No, it's true. And so therefore we spend a whole lot of money on a lot of mechanical screening stuff, which is expensive and not necessarily the most efficient way to go.
And patting down six-year-olds like that happened last year.
Yeah, that one really gets me.
Of course it does.
You know, I mean,
like
excuse
it could
me,
be
like,
my boys.
My grandmother is going to, you know, my 80-whatever-year-old grandmother who's traveling back and forth to Israel is going to be who you suspect? I don't think so.
Yeah, exactly. Well, what happened when you went to Jordan? Because it's really interesting, the Jordanian border is a tough thing for a lot of people.
Oh, that was, our experience was that we were told, we'd been staying in Jerusalem, and we were told that you could get a visa at the King Hussein Bridge crossing, and you could go. We wound up believing that, and they wouldn't let us cross. So the travel agent put us on a flight down to a lot, and we crossed over at Aqaba.
Okay.
And that was fine. Coming back, we did go across the Allenby Bridge, and that was a nightmare.
Hmm.
And I don't know exactly what the arrangements are, but here's what I'm suspecting. I think that if you're Palestinian, you have to fly back and forth through Amman. I'm not sure whether or not they let you go, if your destination is the West Bank, if they let you go through Ben-Gurion Airport in Israel, which is a breeze and wonderful. We got to the Allenby Bridge crossing. They took our passports, which was scary. You're supposed to catch a bus. They couldn't tell us how long it was going to take for us to catch the bus across the border. They said 20 minutes, so an hour and a half later, the bus still hadn't come.
Okay.
Finally, we get on the bus, and we get to the Israeli side, and it was disorganized, and there were, I'm sure, a lot of Palestinians with huge amounts of luggage that all had to be screened. And it took a nightmare. It was a nightmare. And you could see why people who had to travel that way would really resent it. On the other hand, I sure as heck don't fault the Israelis for checking everybody incredibly seriously, because, you know, the one person that they don't check is going to be the one person who comes across with a bomb and sets it off on a bus in Jerusalem.
Right.
So
it sounds like you had a really decent experience, though, overall, which is kind of nice. And you did get to go to a really wonderful place in the world. I haven't been to Israel in many, many years, but I'm planning a trip next year and can't wait to go back. But it sounds like, you know, you experienced some what I would call world-class security, although it didn't always work quite as efficiently as you might have liked. Gail, thank you so much for sharing. It's 21 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Clark. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Glink on News Talk WSB.
6 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Klink sitting in for Clark. Thanks for joining us today. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go back to the phones. Katie joins us on the line. Hi, Katie.
Hi.
What's going on today?
I wanted to call and ask you about traveling in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
My husband and I are going there in April of next year, and we're going to do Venice, Rome, and Sorrento, and I know that you take trains, and I've been looking up some websites where you can order your tickets in advance, and I didn't know what the best way to go about that would be.
I have to say, having just taken a train from Amsterdam to Paris in the last 2 weeks, that train travel in Europe is awesome. It is really easy to do. There are two classes of service, second and first. First, it's really interesting how train travel has changed. Probably if you ever traveled as a teenager or you went in college, you know, my first experience with trains, they just weren't all that fantastic. Now they've got Wi-Fi, they've got food and beverage service, there's the, you know, first class, there's the cart that comes down about every 2 minutes with different things for you. So it's actually a lovely, lovely way to travel and a lot more efficient than driving. I mean, you get a lot out of driving, don't get me wrong, but the train travel was great. If you're traveling in Italy or really anywhere in Europe, you really do want to buy your tickets online ahead of time. You probably don't need to do it now for next April. That's kind of soon. I would wait.
Okay.
But are you working with a travel agent to do any of the other bookings, or are you doing them all yourself?
No, I'm doing everything myself.
Okay. So as you get a little bit closer, say within a month, and the reason you want to buy your tickets ahead of time is a lot of the trains are reservation only.
Right.
So you don't want to not have a reservation and think, oh, I'm going to go there, buy a ticket, and get on the train. The train may be sold out.
Okay.
So you want to think very, and you can't just exchange the tickets for a different, sometimes you can buy a ticket that will let you use it with a reservation at any different train, but a lot of times the most cost-efficient way is going to be to actually buy the ticket for the train you want to be on. So as you get further down the path and you understand exactly where you want to be and what train, you go online and you literally buy the ticket that you want online, and they give you a ticket number, and that's what you're going to need to get there. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink sitting in for Clark. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Glink on News Talk WSB.
36 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm Elise Glink sitting in for Clark today. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time. Think Glink.com, THINKGLINK.com. Mortgage applications fell 5% last week because mortgage rates popped up a little bit and purchase activity picked up, but refinancers, not so much so. According to the Mortgage Bankers Association, the refinance index dropped 9.2% week over week as loan rates rose. Now, how much are we really talking about? Well, you were looking at mortgage interest rates pushing up to, get this, 4.69% from 4.46% the week before. So it's 0.2%, and we saw almost 10% of people drop out in terms of refinancing. Now, there's sort of a real estate experts are discussing why there seems to be so much responsiveness when mortgage interest rates pop up even 0.2%. I mean, we're not even talking about 0.25%. It's even less than that. And yet there seems to be an immediate reaction to it, as though people just have no interest in refinancing or no interest in buying a house if mortgage interest rates are above, say, 4.5%. Now, there seemed to be this psychological barrier of a 5% mark where they see a really big drop-off, much more than a, 10% once you hit that 5% mark. And I think possibly people just don't understand the context of how low interest rates really are. Now, I've said this often, but when I got my first house back in 1989, our interest rate was 11.75%, and we felt lucky to get it. That's right, 11.75%. Every year we were going to pay 11.75% of the purchase price of the property, which was $140,000. And today, our interest rate is 3.75% on a 15-year loan. I mean, it's amazing to me that we could be paying about a third of what we were paying back in 1989. That's just kind of incredible. So it's hard to understand why there's so much adverse reaction to this. And I don't know if it's that people truly can't afford it, or lenders are being so picky that they want you to buy less and spend less than you really can. And the interest rates going up is just people are getting nervous about it, even though they're getting fixed rate loans. Or maybe they feel like, well, it was just lower, it'll probably go lower again, why buy now? So it's kind of interesting to think about why this is happening the way it's happening. And the people who are getting hurt the most, of course, are the new home builders, because if you know for sure that if you're going to buy a new house, you're going to have to get a mortgage. Sometimes if you buy a foreclosure and it's $30,000 or $50,000, you might not need a mortgage if you're coming out of another property where you have a lot of equity. But for a new home, you almost always need it. And when interest rates pop up and people's desire levels go down, I think it's hitting people in the realtors and the developers just smack in the face. 39 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. Let's go back to the phones. Our number, 404-872-0750. Don't forget, you can tweet me. I'm at Glink. Randy joins us on the line from Lilburn. Hi, Randy.
Hi, how you doing, Liz?
Good. What's going on today?
Question about mortgages and home values. About 4 years ago, we bought a distressed property and got an 80-20 on it, actually from Michael Gross, a friend of yours, and spent about $40,000 in materials on the renovation, which I did most of the work on, and then turned around and refinanced the 20% part to pay off the materials, and I didn't put enough effort into research, and we ended up with a 15-year at 8%, and then we have the other that was the 80% of purchase price. It's a 30-year fixed at 6%.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting clobbered on interest right now, and what we want to do is get a single 15-year fixed. But we can't get the home value to match up with it.
Right.
The home has depreciated so much that we're upside down, I guess, about $35,000 right now.
Okay. And can you come to the table with money and do a cash-in refinance?
Not $35,000. But what we're looking at doing is turning part of the – it's a split level.
Mm-hmm.
And turning part of the lower level into an in-law suite because it has a private entrance. And we can do that fairly inexpensively because I can do all the work. So my question is really, what kind of value does that add to the home? Right now it's a 3-2.
I'm not sure it's going to add anything to the home.
Oh, really? So turning it from a 3-2 into like a 4-3 doesn't do much for it?
Well, if you are adding an extra bedroom and a bath, it might, but I don't know. I'm not the right person to ask how much value that's going to add. You would probably want to talk to a couple of local realtors who are sort of actively out there looking at these kinds of properties in your neighborhood and see what they think it'll add. Because doing the work and then having an appraiser brought in might get you at least to even, or it might not. You might spend more money but not have anything to show for it. So I don't want you to throw good money after bad. Now, it seems like a four-bedroom, three-bath would just be better than a three-bedroom, two-bath, and I can see that is typically how it is, but I just want to make sure that you're not compromising. What is the space currently being used for that you're going to take for this?
It's just a big room. It was a gym.
Oh, was it gym?
Yeah, I had, you know, weight sets and treadmill and that whole kind of thing.
Hey, it'll probably help some, but what if it only helps, say, $15,000 worth?
Right.
So do you then have $20,000 to at least get yourself to even?
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that it doesn't sound to me like you have the kind of loan that would qualify for the government refinance program. And
no, I mean, our problem is we're in really good shape as far as making payments and all that, and we have, you know, decent credit scores above 800, and you know, we have no debt. We have no car debt. We have the mortgage, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the property value has depreciated so much because of foreclosures and whatnot in the neighborhood.
Right.
Which this was the first.
Well, the best I can suggest to you right now, Randy, is that you talk to a couple of the realtors in town who specialize in your neighborhood, have them come and take a look at the property, talk to them about what your plans are for it, and ask what they think the value would be. You're going to want them to, they may have to go back to their offices and look at comps and try and help you figure, you know, out what you would be able to compare your property to, the new property to, and what that price point would be. And then you have to decide if you want to move forward, even if it's not going to completely fix your problem. The other thing you can do is just try and pay down that 20% as quickly as you can. And you are getting killed on the interest rate, but there was no way for you to get this loan at the time. Pay it down until you've got some equity back into the property and then start from there. But that might take 2 or 3 years to get you to that place. 44 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB, 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Sue joins us from Sandy Springs. Hi, Sue.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. What's going on today?
I live in a condo complex, a beautiful condo complex along the river, and unfortunately our management company and the board of directors for our homeowners are the same people.
Really?
They're dumping the sewage from the clogged up drain under the dumpster into our parking lot.
They're dumping the sewage from where?
From underneath our community dumpster.
Okay.
Evidently, the drain is clogged, and they put a sump pump underneath it. And so they're just dumping it directly back into our parking lot.
Why would they do that? That's kind of dumb.
Yeah, well, I'm guessing the drain doesn't work.
Okay, so let me back up a minute and ask, what do you mean your management and the board of directors are the same? Is this a new community? Is it the developer?
It's a 30-year-old community. We have property in here that goes back into the beginning of the 80s.
Okay, and so why is the board of... Who's on the board of directors? You mean the owner of the management company is an owner and they're on the board of directors?
Well, his children are the board of directors.
The children live there and they're on the board of directors and they hired their dad to be the management company.
I believe the dad started the management company and elected his children to be on the board because he doesn't live here. So it's kind of difficult to get anything resolved here because unless it's in the best interest of the management company, I don't think it really happens quickly.
Okay.
So,
have you talked to whoever is the president of the board of directors?
Actually, we sent letters to them,
mm-hmm.
and the letters are being ignored. So we went to the community and posted letters around the community with our dissatisfaction, and they're just ripped down, and there's no response to them.
Okay, what you may need to do is have a real estate attorney look at the condo deck
mm-hmm.
or the homeowners association declaration and try and figure out what you need to do to have a change or call a special election.
Okay.
You may need to get a certain number of your neighbors to sign on to a petition, and you're going to have to do the groundwork to get that done. You can also start to go to board meetings.
Yeah, unfortunately, they only have them twice a year.
Well, maybe it's time to have them more often.
Right.
You have to look at the rules and regulations of the building, and you're going to have to see how you can start to... I mean, this is politics. So you're going to have to start to see how you can push the board and get your neighbors to help push the board into making some bigger changes.
Right.
And the only way to get involved, you know, to make changes is to get involved and to be an activist about it.
Right. And I feel like I'm trying, you know, really desperately to get everybody a little bit fired up about it because I don't have children, but I have a pet, and he's walking through that sewage.
Well, you can always call the village and have them come out and do an inspection.
The village?
Sure. To whoever is, you live in a municipality, I assume.
Yes.
And the municipality has a building department, and they have inspectors, and you can just say, there seems to be raw sewage running into our parking lot. Do you want to come and take a look?
That's perfect.
And if they cite the building will have to pay attention to that. A step up from that is to actually file a lawsuit. So there are lots of things that you can do. You just have to decide, you know, how nasty you're willing to let it get so that your pet doesn't drink raw sewage or whatever
right.
that is that's floating in there, which is kind of gross if you think about it.
Would we make sure that the Homeowners Association isn't paying for the legal fees out of our monthly dues?
But they do pay for the legal fees out of your monthly dues. That's the management fee would have to represent themselves unless their agreement with the board is that if they get sued on behalf of something they've done with the building, that the building would front their fees. But you're going to know that ahead of time because you're going to go ask for copies of all the documentation, and you're entitled to see the copy of the contract and all the rest.
Perfect. All right, well, thank you so much for your help.
You're more than welcome. I hope it works for you. And, you know, can I give you a resource to go to, a place to get some really good information?
Absolutely.
There's a website called NOLO.com. NOLO.com. They are a publisher of, I think, excellent legal information. And
okay.
You would probably want to look for a book called Neighbor Law.
Neighbor Law. Okay.
Neighbor Law. I really like that book. I think that book has a lot of information that's very helpful, and I think that you'll find some good clues in there. And I know the author of that book, and you could always email her and all the rest. And I just think that you'll find an opportunity to really understand what's going on and what your opportunities and your options are before you start making phone calls. I always like it when people educate themselves, Sue. 404-872-0750. You know, Clark's got a new book out. I took a quick peek last week when I was running around town the other day. It's called Living Large in Lean Times. It's being officially released in August. And to celebrate, Clark is giving away cash from his own wallet at clarkhoward.com. Cash from his own wallet. And not just a small amount of cash. It's a big chunk of change. Winners are being announced every Wednesday afternoon in July, and today, being Wednesday, we have another winner. Martha Petrovich, you have won $500 in cash directly from Clark Howard, and if I were you, I'd make him sign every one of those bills. Find out more about the book and ways that you can win at both WSBRadio.com and at ClarkHoward.com. 50 minutes past the hour, I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of the Clark Howard Show on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Glink on News Talk WSB.
56 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB, 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station, or you can find me online, my website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Mary joins us on the line. Hey, Mary, welcome to the Clark Howard Show.
Hi, Elise. Well, now that I've been thinking about it, I've got two questions for you.
All right, well, let's start with number one.
Okay, my daughter is 22 years old, and she just came in to $20,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's nice.
So eventually she will want to put a down payment on a home or whatever, but we don't know what to do with it until that time. She still has 1 year of college left.
Okay. And is she paying, does she have loans for those college expenses?
No, she does not.
Great. So that's a very nice thing that you've given her. So the question is,
her to be listening to that, huh?
Yeah, well, it's a requirement that all children listen when their parents go on the air. Seriously, how soon do you think your daughter might need that money? Because there is no great place to put money that's risk-free, that's perfectly liquid, that earns any sort of return whatsoever at all. I mean, you're basically looking at like a 6-month or 1 year CD, and that's about as good as you're going to do. If she needs it anytime soon, if you're telling me she's not going to buy this house for 8 more years, Then I might have a few more options for you. But it seems like maybe she wants this money to be perfectly liquid and perfectly safe.
Well, she, right now with the market the way it is, she thought it would be a good time to buy a place, but we've got to work on getting her credit.
Mary, we have a traffic emergency. Stand by.
Okay.
This is a breaking traffic bulletin from the News Talk WSB 24-Hour Traffic Center.
It's 158 News Talk WSB 24-Hour Traffic Center. Looking at the WSB Jam Cam, we got trouble on the outer loop, on the inner loop traveling southbound 285, but northbound on Georgia 400. All lanes are blocked at 285. That's a traffic red alert. If you're traveling in the area, make sure to try to get off before you hit 285. Andrew Heyman, News Talk WSB.
All right, Mary, 58 minutes past the hour, we're back. Mary was talking about her daughter, 22, who's just come into an inheritance or money of $20,000 and is trying to decide what to do. Tell me again, what do you think your her timeline is going to be, Mary?
Well, she graduates from college in May, and then depending on where she'll get her job or whatever, I guess is mainly what it depends on. But we were thinking with the market the way it was and condos and everything, so inexpensive that we should, you know, maybe think about getting something, but we have to work on her credit as far as getting her credit.
Okay. So she needs credit. She needs to not be spending this money right now. What I think you should do is put it into a one-year CD or a six-month CD, and in that CD, she will have an opportunity while that's, you know, in that place and locked down to think about where she's going to be when she graduates, what kind of place she wants to live in, how start working on her credit. We have to go. We're going to have a quick break here, but Mary, I'm going to think of some other strategies for her, and I'm going to put you on hold. When we come back after news, weather, and traffic, I want to talk a little bit more about this, and of course, you've had your second question as well. 59 minutes past the hour, I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show on AM 750 and 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Glink on News Talk WSB.
7 minutes past the hour on The Clark Howard Show. Welcome back, everybody, to our second hour. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Clark today. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, thinkglink.com. Well, in other mortgage news today, the Justice Department said yesterday that it is suing the nation's largest mortgage insurance company and two of its underwriters alleging discrimination against women on maternity leave. Here's what's happening. Milwaukee-based Mortgage Guaranteed Insurance Corporation, otherwise known as MGIC or MAGIC, required women who were on paid maternity leave to return to work before the company would insure their mortgages. So you and your husband are having a baby, you've had your baby, and now you're on maternity leave, and you're being paid for that maternity leave. You're going back after maternity leave is over, and you're applying to refinance your loan. And the insurance company comes back and says, I'm sorry, but until the woman goes back to her job, we're not going to insure this mortgage. Right? And the Justice Department, because they're requiring women on paid maternity leave to return to work, the Justice Department said that could keep women from getting home loans, since most lenders require insurance from applicants seeking to borrow more than 80% of their home's value. So this is, you know, you only need private mortgage insurance if you're putting down less than 20%, or if you have less than 20% equity in a home you're refinancing. So the Justice Department says this constitutes discrimination, which is barred by fair housing laws. Now, MGIC has not said anything about it, and it's like, oh, we can't say anything. It's ongoing litigation. But it's kind of interesting, and this topic came up, I think, about a year and a half ago when we had started to hear about how pregnant women or women who had just been given birth were being treated differently. Now, a test case would be as if the husband was on paid maternity leave or paternity leave, right? And if they required him to go back to work before granting the loan as well. If they did, that would be one thing. But I'm guessing that they didn't. And so requiring women to go back from a paid maternity leave to a full-time job before allowing them to qualify for a loan doesn't seem quite fair. So we'll have to watch this lawsuit and see how it progresses. The lawsuit was just filed yesterday, so you know how the wheels of justice grind slowly. I'm sure we'll be talking about this again. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go back to the phones. Linda joins us on the line. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Elise.
Welcome to the Clark Howard Show.
Please.
Sure, what's on your mind? Go ahead.
In mid-March of this year, 2011, I began receiving a collection notice from a company in New Jersey for an outstanding bill.
Mm-hmm.
And when I received the first one, I called them. And the bill is 24 years old. And I do not know what it's for. So after that, they said, well, it's 24 years old. You have to pay it regardless. So after that, I had my credit report ran, and it's not showing up. And I also called the bank that supposedly is the original creditor, and they told me I have never had an account with them. But they would not give me anything in writing to send to these people. And I still continue to get these bills. It's $2,836.33.
So
I don't know who they are, and I have bought 3 homes in the last 10 years, and it's never shown up on my credit. So what do I do?
Well, first of all, you can say to them, this isn't yours.
I did.
And they have to prove to you that it is yours. Have you asked them to provide?
They do that?
They're supposed to provide you proof. So if you signed something, if it was a credit card or if it was some sort of a payment for something and you signed it, they're supposed to have a copy of that.
They won't issue me anything.
Then you tell them that according to the FTC, they are in violation and they should stop calling you or you're going to report them to the FTC.
The FTC is, I'm sorry, I don't mean
the
to
federal,
seem ignorant.
Not at all. The Federal Trade Commission.
Okay.
Which oversees collection agencies. And there is something called the Fair Collection Act, which you can look at online, that lays out for you in a very clear way off the FTC.gov website exactly what the creditor has to do to prove to you that you owe this debt.
Should I put that in? See, I haven't put anything in writing to these people because I figured, well, I have called them twice. I have contacted the bank. I have never had an account with them yet. Excuse me. I just got another bill from them this week.
It's entirely possible. But it's entirely possible that this is just fake. This often happens as a scam. Where collection
agents. I realize that.
Yeah, so it's entirely possible this is fake, and I would just call them on it and say, look, you're in violation of the Federal Trade Commission statute. Unless you can prove to me that I owe this and show me my signature on a piece of paper, never call here again. If you call here again, I'm going to report you. And they my guess is
writing?
They'll. You can put it in writing, and you can also tell them the next time they call you.
Well, they're not calling me. They're sending me letters.
Okay, well, then send it in writing to them that this is not your debt. You have never had a relationship with this bank. You do not owe anything, that this is fake, and that unless they can prove to you and show you your own signature, they're in violation of the FTC rule. And just be firm with them. You can do that.
Well, and I have. I just, and it's so old. It's 24 years old.
Yeah,
and I don't.
Statute of limitations would have expired anyway by now.
Well, that's what I told them. And they said, if you owe it, you owe it. You have to pay it. And I said, I'm not paying it.
Good.
I said, I don't know who you are. I've called the bank. They don't know who I am. It's not on my credit report, and I'm not paying it.
I think that's all good stuff. And, you know, if you feel like you have to have more contact with them, then I would just send them this letter and say, you know, look, Federal Trade Commission, Fair Collection Act, you're not playing by the rules. And you can tell them to stop. And then I would just not open any more mail from them and then just return to sender. Because if they're not calling you and they're just sending you these letters, it might be annoying to get these letters, but, you know, really, you've already done all the right stuff. You've checked your credit. It's not being reported. You've called the bank. You know you don't owe this. You've never had a relationship with this bank. My sense is this is just one of those scams where they're trying to get you all riled up so that you'll pay them something, and there's no reason that you have to. 404-872-0750. Let's continue on with the calls. James joins us on the line. Hi, James.
Hey, how are you doing? I'm trying to figure out how to file an appeal for my ridiculous property tax. Property value keeps going down, but, you know, the property tax still doesn't go down.
Okay. Well, the first thing that happens is there's a limited window in which you can file an appeal.
Right. I just received the letter, and I have until the 16th to file the appeal.
Excellent. So there's two things. July or August?
Yes.
Great.
So August.
So you've got 6 weeks or 5 weeks to go, which is great. There's two ways you can go. You can do this yourself, or you can hire an attorney to do it, and the attorney will get anywhere from 30 to 50% of whatever savings they get for you for just the first year. So those are your two choices. Now, assuming you want to do it yourself, what you need to do is figure out what the tax classification is of your house and what the tax classification is of all the other houses in the neighborhood, and then match up what they're paying on their with square foot and the condition of the house and all the rest with what you're paying.
How do you go about finding an attorney?
One way that I would do it is to call the Atlanta Bar Association. And I would ask for either the head of the I would do the real estate division, the person who's the head of the real estate committee, and I would ask that person to recommend some names to you.
So, okay, call the Atlanta Bar
Association. Atlanta Bar Association, and then just ask for the person who's the head of the real estate committee, and they'll give you a name and number. Call that person, tell them what you're looking for, and then they should be able to refer you to a few different attorneys who handle this kind of work. It's a very specific thing.
Right, so normally it's only like 30 to 50%. So if they save $500, it costs me about $250 now.
If they save you, what you should not do is pay them up front. You
right.
only pay them based on the savings, and then it should be, if it's they save you $500, you pay them $250 for the first year, and then going forward you're in great shape because now you're back at the lower level.
Okay. All right, thank you.
You're very welcome. Good luck with that. 17 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show, 404-872-0750. Mark joins us on the line from Canton. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how are you today?
Good. What's going on?
Me and my wife, we're just kind of getting started. We have our first kid. She's only 6 months old.
Oh, congratulations. Such a cute age.
Thank you, ma'am. We're wanting to buy a new car, and I really don't want to go through a buy here, pay here place. And both of our credit, I don't have good credit, and she has no credit.
Okay.
And I really don't want to go through a buy here, pay here place. So what would you recommend doing?
You know, you're in a really tough spot. Have you actually pulled a copy of your credit history?
Yes, both of us have.
And what does it look like?
Hers, of course, has nothing on it except for maybe a hospital bill way back several years ago, and mine's around a 620, I believe, 600, something like that.
Okay, a 620, a 600 or 620 might be high enough to get an auto loan. You won't get a great rate, but it might be enough to get one. Do you bank at a credit union by chance?
Not yet, but my employer, I can go through a credit union with them.
Okay, you should do that. And because you're an employee, the credit union there might be a little bit more amenable to working with you with a slightly lower credit score.
Okay.
Now, if your wife doesn't have any credit, I don't know how they'll feel about putting her on the title to the car. They might be okay about it,
right?
Because you're married. But I would start the conversation there because it's your employer's credit union. They know where you work. They know how to get your money. And usually they're a little bit more lenient. And then
okay.
You and your wife need to get started building up some credit.
Now, how do we go about doing that?
Well, for her, where she doesn't have any at all, she needs to get some sort of credit in her name. And I would start with a secured credit card. mm-hmm. where you go to the credit union and you say, if you have a credit card, I'll put $500 in an account if you'll make it a credit card for her. And that means she can never charge more than $500. And I would just charge like $10 or $20 and pay it off in full at the end of the month. And after about 6 months or a year, she should qualify for a gas credit card and then maybe a full credit card.
Okay.
That's as complicated as it needs to be. And then she should always pay off all of her bills in full.
Okay.
And for you, it's the same sort of thing. It's you need to eliminate the negatives on the credit report, or if there are any, and then you need to just pay your bills on time and in full at the end of the month so that you're paying down your debt or you're not having any new debt, and you're allowing for some on-time payments of a year or 2 years to get onto your credit history, and that's going to help pump you up quite a bit. So it's important to get started on this. I know there are a lot of people out there who believe, like, you know, one of my colleagues, Dave Ramsey, that you shouldn't have any credit whatsoever, but when it comes time to buy a car, it can be very helpful. So, you know, not many people have $20,000 or $30,000 in cash in the bank just waiting to buy the next car, so you want to make sure that your credit is there just in case you need it. 404-872-0750. It's 20 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Glink on News Talk WSB.
26 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Clark today. Our number, 404-872-0750. Thanks for joining us here at News Talk WSB. Let's go back to the phones. Bill joins us on the line. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Elise. My daughter recently purchased a home through a short sale, and mm-hmm. at closing, she had 30% equity. But the loan officer and also the realty agent told her that it was a law that she had to pay PMI for 5 years. Is that correct?
Well, that depends. When you say that she had 30% equity closing, what are you basing that on?
On the mortgage company's appraisal.
On the appraisal?
Uh-huh.
I don't believe that it is the law of the land that she had to pay private mortgage insurance, but the lender may have required her to pay it. And the way it works is once you have it, you're only supposed to have it if you're getting a loan for less than 20%, the 80%, or more than 80%. So if she had a loan and her loan to value was 80%, or in this case 70%, she should have insisted that she not pay PMI. But if she was paying it as a condition of getting the loan on a short sale where the value wasn't really secure, then she agreed to it. But it's not ever the law of the land. There is no law out there that says, unless you're getting an FHA loan. If she has an FHA loan, she'll pay PMI, or what their equivalent is, which is mortgage insurance, MI, but she'll pay that for the whole life of the loan.
She doesn't have FHA.
She does not have FHA?
No. And the loan officer, the short sale didn't require PMI as a condition of short sale.
Okay.
The loan officer that approved the loan told her that she would have to pay PMI.
Well, she should have asked why. And she probably should have talked to a bunch of other lenders, which is why I always recommend when you're shopping for a loan, you talk to 4 or 5 different lenders and different kinds of lenders, like credit union, big bank, online, so that you really understand what the market is and what you're being told, and then you know that it's correct. 28 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink on the Clark Howard Show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Glink on News Talk WSB.
35 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Clark today. We are at 404-872-0750, but online all the time. And feel free to tweet me. My website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter and stay on top of all things Glink. So my good friend Steve Cook of the Real Estate Economy Watch has been writing on the Equifax blog about housing. And I think he's come to the opinion that basically if everybody owned pets, that we might be able to get the housing market moving simply because it's too hard to have a pet in a rental these days. There was a national survey released this year in February that said the fifth ranking reason that people buy homes today was found to be because, quote, they don't want to pay extra to own pets. And this reason outranked they want to live the American dream and they want more space. So it turns out that the number of U.S. households that own a pet hit an all-time high of almost 73 million. Out of those, more than 46 million families own dogs and 2.5 million have a horse or two. So about half of all pet owners consider their pets to be family members as opposed to pets, and the actual number of pet-owning households is significantly higher than it was 20 years ago. Okay, so that's on the pet side of it, right? But finding pet-friendly rentals is pretty tough, right? So 50%, at least 50% of all rentals prohibit pets, and those that do allow pets charge a fee for them. So you might have a flat fee of, say, $20 to $700 a month, or excuse me, per year, per rental. Or you might have a surcharge, a monthly surcharge of $6 to $25. The most often quoted charge for a pet is $15. The upfront average fee is $225. And $100 is often the most high quoted fee. Now, if you have a big dog, which is often anything over 15 pounds, sometimes 20 pounds, big dogs could be $400 or $500 as an extra fee on top of all the other fees. Now, 35% of tenants without pets would own a pet if their landlord permitted it. And that number comes to us from the Foundation for Interdisciplinary Research and Education Promoting Animal Welfare. I think they called it that because the acronym is FIREPAW. That's just a guess, though. But in today's rental market, few landlords feel that they need to cater to pet owners simply because there are so many people who want to rent the few good houses there are out there. And I understand it from a landlord's point of view. I am not a pet lover, although I've often said I'd have a horse before a dog. But we had a tenant once who had a dog, and that little dog scratched through a newly finished, refinished floor. And we had to spend $6,000 having the floor repaired. And unfortunately, the tenant only gave us a month's security deposit and then the first month's rent. And the rent was only $3,000 for this place. It was a really nice place that we had. And so it was only half as much as we needed. And so we billed that person for it, but we didn't get all the money and we were out a little bit. So I understand why landlords sometimes don't want pets. And it's not to say that pets aren't lovely and well-behaved and all the rest, but sometimes they're not. I mean, they're animals, so it is what it is. Sometimes people aren't very well-behaved either. I'm going to tell you some stories about some tenants we've had like that as well. But it's kind of interesting to look at what's going on across the country regarding pets and rentals. So in Fargo, North Dakota last year, a landlord was charged with discrimination for charging a non-refundable deposit of $200 plus $20 more per month in rent to tenants with disabilities who own companion animals. It's a little bit different, right? Like a seeing eye dog. Lack of pet-friendly housing is the primary reason that owners relinquish their pets to shelters, according to the American Humane Society, which is sort of interesting. And it's kind of the idea of, well, if you want to rent your place and get a good price for it, if you just allow pets, you might actually get that, you know, rented pretty quickly. If you own a house or if you rent a house and they don't allow pets and you want to have a dog or a cat, you may decide to buy a house. And that was Steve's point, is that pets are now such a significant part of the American population, the American households that have it, that it could be a driving factor for the real estate market. You can read more about what Steve thinks about pets and real estate at the Equifax personal finance blog. Just click on the real estate part of that and you'll see my shining face and then you'll see the story that Steve wrote. Equifax.com/BLOG. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. It's 41 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. Thomas joins us on the line from Cumming. Hi, Thomas.
Hi. How are you, Liz?
I'm great. What's going on today?
Well, I'll give you a brief history. I lost about 90% of my income 2 years ago, and so I decided to do a mortgage modification this year. And when I got everything back, they jumped it up $20,000. And, of course, my tax statement has lost another $10,000. So I'm about $100,000 upside down now. And then I got a call from them the other day saying, oh, well, you got to pay any of the old late fees. I said, well, you just charged $20,000. And they haven't sent me any paperwork yet. So I don't know. I'm kind of beside myself whether I just walk away from this thing. But.
Well, you think you're, do you really think you're $100,000 underwater on it?
Yeah, my tax statement, the way they're doing the merit companies out, they're taxing on the fair market value, and they dropped it down to $148,000.
Okay, and how much do you owe?
Well, now $240,000.
Okay. So you're looking at about $80,000 underwater, or about $100,000 underwater. Okay. And the bank has done a modification, or they didn't? It sounds like they did. They added money to the amount that you owed.
Yeah, they did the modification.
But
right.
They didn't give you paperwork?
No paperwork.
And how long has this been going on?
About a month now. I've been asking for it because I knew that I was going to have to make a payment in July, and I finally told them at the end of June. I said, if I don't get it, I'm not making a payment. So if we got... You know.
Have you been late with any of your payments up until now?
A few days late. That's why I modified the mortgage.
Okay. Well, I would keep calling them and trying to figure out what's going on. You know, it's just atrocious how bad the customer service has been here. You can't even say it's customer no service, like Clark likes to say, because in my mind, it's almost like institutionalized bad service. You have customer service reps making $18,000 a year who clearly just are not trained, don't care. And at some point in time, I think companies have to own that. And the small millions of dollars that the OCC is charging these companies for their bad behavior is kind of not even a rounding error. So I wish I had something good that I could tell you to do. The only thing I could suggest is if you don't hear anything in the next couple of weeks, I would find the corporate headquarters of the bank or the lender, and I would try to contact somebody in the CEO office or somebody at a C-level executive, like the CFO, the COO, you know, the chief of operations, chief of the financial, head of marketing, head of corporate communications, the CEO's office. I would try to reach up somewhere at that level because there they actually have the ability to help you at a much lower level. And they have corporate, a lot of the CEO offices now have ombudsmen, ombudspeople who can step in and try to, you know, match people up. And that's really the best advice I can give you. The other thing that you can do is you can file an official complaint with the OCC, which regulates the big national banks anyway, at helpwithmybank.gov, helpwithmybank.gov. And that's the only other thing you can do. Otherwise, you have to decide if you're going to make the tough decision and you're going to walk away from this house. And unfortunately, I don't really think there's an easy answer there. 45 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Let's continue on with our calls. Keisha joins us on the line from Lithonia. Hi, Keisha.
Hello. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks. What's going on?
Well, I have an issue where I have a judgment against me for a vending machine that a company that I signed papers for a company that I work for. And I'm trying to get the judgment off. I'm trying to get my name off of it. I've spoken with the company I work for, and they agreed to pay it. They paid it for a while, and then they stopped paying it. So now I've just recently gotten letter from the people saying that I need to pay, you know, $7,000.
All right, let me back up a little bit. Why, if you were working for a company and you signed something in your capacity as an employee, why are they coming after you personally for this?
I don't know. They said that I was doing business as the company.
Is it your company?
Excuse me?
Is it your company?
No.
And what happened when they, how did you get a judgment against you? Did you get a notice about a court date?
They did. They sent me the, I guess, for me to answer back, and
yeah.
I was ignorant and didn't know that I was really supposed to answer back.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't mine, so I thought it was nothing, and, you know, that's where the judgment came.
Oh.
So I ended up going to court and, you know, let them, you know, have me not pursue it. We just didn't go to court that day. They made agreement with the lawyer that they would pay a monthly payment. They paid for a while and they stopped.
Okay.
So now they're asking me again, you know, sending letters.
Keisha, I'm not a lawyer, but you need a lawyer here. You need a lawyer because you didn't answer the court case. If you had gone to court that day and simply said to the judge, Judge, I have nothing to do with this. I worked for this company. I don't own this company. I have nothing to do with this company. I don't owe this debt. It's not mine. I simply work for them. I no longer work for them. I have nothing to do with them. This is on them. Then the judge would not have put a judgment against you. But if you're not there to defend yourself, that's what happens. And now you have to try and unwind it. And I seriously don't know how you're going to do that. You really need legal help. You need more help than I can give you here.
Okay.
Cause that's,
okay, well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Keisha. Good luck, and I hope it works out. 47 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB, 404-872-0750. Mary joins us on the line. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Elise. You forgot about me.
I did forget about you. I'm sorry. We went to break and we came back. Why don't you start with your second question?
Okay, let's start with my second question. My husband and I have 7 years left on our mortgage. We are at 5% interest, and I did not know if there was a way to refinance that we could get it down maybe 5 years at a cheaper interest rate and probably end up paying about the same amount.
If you only have 7 years left on your mortgage.
Mm-hmm.
Did I hear that correctly?
Yes, ma'am.
There's no reason that you should be refinancing your mortgage.
Well, okay, well, I had heard, you know, like the 5-1 ARMs were like at 3%. And we're paying 5%, so I thought, well, gee, if I paid the same amount.
But you have to. But when you refinance, you're going to have to pay fees. You might pay thousands of dollars to refinance that mortgage. So the interest rate is down. Right? The interest rate is a little bit lower, but you're now paying much more interest, and you're not, you've now been out, maybe you're out $4,000, but you only have 7 years left. By the time you reached 7 years left in a loan, I assume it was a 30-year loan originally?
It was 15.
A 15-year loan. So you've now paid well more than half of the amount that you're going to pay. Most of what you have left is principal. You've paid most of the interest. Right.
Okay.
When you look at an amortization schedule, you pay all of the interest at the beginning, and then it kind of shrinks and shrinks and shrinks while the amount of the principal balance increases. Right?
Right.
So and that's how it is for any loan. You know, the bank always wants their money up front. So what you have is now that you're halfway through this loan, you're basically just paying down principal, and you're paying it down really quickly. So if you refinance, what you're going to end up doing is pay an extra $4,000, and you're really not going to pay off this loan any faster.
You think
you are, but you really won't. What I would suggest is if you have the extra $4,000 that you would use to close on the loan, use that to prepay this loan even more, and you'll probably end up saving at least a half a year of payments and maybe even more on that. You might even, depending on what the actual amount of the loan is, you might be able to save a year or two and just get it paid down that much faster. But when you're that far into a loan, it rarely pays to refinance. 51 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Link. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Glink on News Talk WSB.
Today at 5:05, you've got Sean Hannity discussing and analyzing the Casey Anthony trial. Will Casey's mother, Cindy, be tried for perjury? And what kind of sentence can we expect the judge to Casey tomorrow morning? All that and more at 5:05 on the Sean Hannity Show here on News Talk WSB. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Mark joins us on the line from Duluth. Hi, Mark. Mark, you with us? I don't think Mark is there. All right. We will, Mark, call back if you can. 404-872-0750. Let's try Kevin. Kevin, you with us?
I am.
What's going on today?
Well, not a whole lot. I have a question for you. My wife and I currently have a mortgage. We have an 80-15 loan that we got a couple of years ago. So we paid 5% down, and to avoid PMI, we did 80% on one and a second mortgage for 15%. Both of them are fixed rates, and you know we haven't had any problems paying them off.
Mm-hmm.
We have an opportunity through our current lender to do a what they call a HARP refinance.
Yep.
Which is a government program, and right now we're at 5.75% on our rate, and my lender is telling me that I'm eligible to drop it to either 5.125 or possibly 5%.
Okay.
At no cost, which I think is maybe what's causing me some reserve, because there's always a cost, it seems like.
Well, they get paid by the government. The costs get picked up by the government for that.
Okay. And then I can keep my current term, so I don't have to go back to 30 years. I can keep it. We did refinance once, so it'd be 28 years instead of 30.
I can't think of a single reason why you wouldn't do that.
Okay.
So no cost. They're going to drop you down. You can keep your current terms. Sounds like a win-win for you. And I would hope you'd use the extra savings each month. How much savings are you going to have? About $100 a month?
Yeah, something along those lines. I haven't actually done all the figures yet to know for sure.
Yeah, I hope you use that $100 a month to either prepay the mortgage and get rid of that. I would try and get rid of the home equity loan first, just to get rid of it. But I hope you use it to keep paying down that loan so you don't have to worry about it down the line. But the HARP refinance program, not a loan modification, should not have any effect whatsoever on your credit history or your credit score. Is a good deal if you can get it. And lenders are trying to show that they're good corporate citizens by reaching out to people like you and trying to make it a little bit easier for you. So I would suggest you take them up on it before they change their minds. 58 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for Clark Howard. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Glink on News Talk WSB.
Minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for joining us here on News Talk WSB. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to check out my Sunday show 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB, and I'll be in for Clark again tomorrow as well. So the government announced a $1 billion program plus another $7 billion program to help homeowners who are in imminent danger of foreclosure. I'm almost a little hesitant to talk about this program because over the last 4 years, I've been talking about all of these emergency programs that the government announces and supposedly puts into place, and nothing ever happens, or very little. It's hugely disappointing. But the government, as part of the Dodd-Frank Act, did set aside $7.5 billion for the hardest hit fund, which are for 18 states, Georgia's among them, that have been the hardest hit by the housing crisis, and another $1 billion for homeowners who are in imminent danger of foreclosure, lost their jobs or income has vanished. And this is a program that I actually think may be ready for prime time. May. Of course, I use that with all due respect. If you go to HUD.gov, HUD.gov, and underneath the big box. It's a blue box, and there's a thing that says HUD resources. But underneath there, it says, I want to. The very first thing is apply for emergency home loaner assistance, homeowner loan assistance. If you click on that, you're going to get to a website in conjunction with NeighborWorks, which is a good program. NeighborWorks America is a good program out of D.C. And right here, you're going to see the Emergency Homeowners Loan Program, EHLP. It looks like help, and it's somebody spelled wrong. Can't help that. I didn't write the website. But anyway, it's EHLP, Emergency Homeowners Loan Program. There is a this is a free program, so nobody should be charging you anything. You can apply yourself. There is a pre-applicant screening workshop worksheet that's on the main website. You will have to fill out the worksheet. They're going to make a determination of your eligibility. If you meet the eligibility, then you will be randomly selected to apply for an EHLP loan in the order that they're applied for. Some homeowners will not get it. There's a limited number of funds here. It's like $1 billion. And if you are selected, you'll be called to schedule an appointment to fill out the rest of the information. Now, the screening period runs from June 20th to July 22nd. The homeowner application period begins in late July after the screening process closes. So if you are having trouble paying your mortgage and that this is something that you would like to do and you're listening to the show, you can go to HUD.gov and you will be able to find out if you qualify. Now, you can also find out at HUD.gov by talking to a housing counselor if there are any other programs that you qualify for. And as I said, I believe Georgia is part of the Hardest Hit Fund. And so you should be able to get access to some of those dollars. The other place to talk to a HUD-certified housing counselor is through Credibility, which is the former Consumer Credit Counseling Services of Greater Atlanta. You can go to credibility.org and get more information there as well. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Chris joins us on the line. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Elise. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. What's on your mind?
Quite a unique situation, I believe. My wife and I filed bankruptcy last year, and we included our mortgage in that bankruptcy. And on the day that our house was sold at the auction, the people who bought the house showed up in our driveway and offered to sell the home back to us for $56,000, which is what they paid for at the auction plus the insurance.
Okay.
As far as I know, the house at the auction appraised for well over $120,000. My question to you would be, is it something that sounds like I should do something like that? And if so, how would I even go about trying to get financing within a year for something like that with a bankruptcy?
You know, I have to tell you, it sounds like a complete scam. I don't know who these people are, but first of all, why would they sell you something that they had bought for the exact amount they paid for it? Why don't they want to make a profit would be my first question.
So what I understand, the gentleman was not looking to buy my house particularly, but another house in the area, and he is overwhelmed right now. It's not a company, it's a private individual, and he's overwhelmed with the load that he has right now.
Why did he make an offer for your house if he wanted a different house?
That is a good question. But I have affirmed that he is the owner of the house, and I have it in writing that within a year he will sell the house back to me for $56,000.
Well, there's no way for you to get a mortgage with a bankruptcy within 3 years. So if this is dependent on you getting a mortgage, I don't know how you're going to do it. If you can scrape together $56,000 and pay him in cash and you've got a lawyer who looks over your paperwork and makes sure that you're not being scammed, okay. But it sounds really, really fishy to me. I don't understand why he would sell you the house after owning it for a year and taking on all the risk without any profit. I understand the story he told you, but I don't know. Have you checked him out?
I have. I've worked with him on a couple of other houses. He does buy foreclosed homes and does resell them. He's just not interested in my particular home. It may be because it needs some repairs, or it may be simply because he is overwhelmed. But I know that, you know, I've heard of private mortgage lenders that might do something like that. There was another company that had contacted me and told me they could clean up my credit.
No, that's for sure. I know that for sure is a scam.
Okay, good.
I know that's for sure a scam. You know, $56,000 is something that maybe there's a family member that you could borrow money from for the next couple of years, but lenders cannot lend you money for the next 3 to 5 years once you've had a bankruptcy. So if you're going to buy this house from him in a year, and why would he be willing to hold it for a year? I'm not quite sure for you. But if he wants to finance it and you pay him, as long as you guys sign a proper loan agreement and you've got a lender you've got a real estate attorney who's going to make sure that you're signing the right kind of paperwork, I'm good with that. I just think that you need to do some more checking and you need to have legal representation.
Okay.
It just makes me makes me very nervous. If you'd said that it's somebody you've worked with, they're going to buy the house, you're going to give them a 20% profit at the end of the year, I think all that sounds good. But, you know, you had a bank, you basically foreclosed on the mortgage, right? I mean, you're in the house, but it was part of the bankruptcy. You know, seems a little fishy to me. But I hope it's real. Wouldn't that be great if it were real? Just do me a favor, check it out, have a lawyer, get a lawyer involved, figure out a way, even if you borrow $15,000 from three family members and you put the rest up yourself in cash, in another 4 or 5 years you might be able to refinance that again. I just want to make sure that you're really covered so that in a year you don't wind up having paid this guy rent for a year and then he walks away and, you know, the property is lost forever. 15 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Sean joins us on the line from Suwannee. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Elise. How are you?
Good, thank you. What's on your mind?
My wife and I moved to Atlanta about 9 months ago from North Carolina. I have a house for sale in North Carolina that I've dropped the price on several times. It's on a 15-year loan. We've made great payments on it. I only owe $139 on it. Mm-hmm. But the problem is now money is getting tighter and I'm wanting to get out of this house. And I was wondering if any of those companies who advertise that they buy houses, if theirs are legitimate and if they're going to be offer enough to make it worthwhile.
Well, you never know what they're going to offer till you ask. I think the most legitimate of those companies is the We Buy Ugly Houses.
Okay.
But I'm not sure why they would buy yours over a whole bunch of foreclosures.
Yeah, that's what I'm curious about. Ours is built in 2007, and it's basically immaculate, and so I'm curious if any of those places are even going to be interested in buying a house like mine.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the question is, what can you do to make your house more saleable? What can you do to raise the profile of the house? What did the agent tell you?
The agent is a friend of ours, and he's done some good things. It's in a small town in North Carolina. There's just not a lot of buying that's going on right now. Most of the purchases that are being made are ones that are foreclosures, and they're just absolutely great deals. I bought my house in 2007 for $193,000, and I'm selling it right now. Well, I'm trying to sell it right now for $179,000, and so I've done a substantial drop on the house, and so I think the finance or the price point is at the right place, but I'm not certain what else we can do. I've done a great job with the landscaping in the yard, keeping that up. The only thing that I thought maybe we could possibly do was some staging on the inside. It's currently unoccupied, so there's nothing in there right now. But beyond that, the house is in really, really good condition, as well as the yard and the neighborhood.
Can I just, I'm thrilled that you've taken care of it. You did change your insurance to vacant insurance, right?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Great.
We did. We have a great insurance agent who contacted us and made sure that we did that after the allotted period of time.
You know, I guess the question is, you know, who's going to buy this house? Sometimes I think sellers overlook the obvious. So think about who is the market for this property. At $139,000, you're trying to sell it for $179,000, $180,000. So somebody needs to make $50,000 to $60,000, really, maybe even $70,000 to buy this house.
Right, right.
So what kind of a job in that, wherever you live, in North Carolina or wherever the house is located, what kind of a job will pay that, and who are the employers who pay that. And
right.
maybe there's a lot, maybe there's a little, but maybe there's a way to network with, if it's in a great neighborhood and a good school district, you network with the human resources department of some of these companies
okay.
and say, hey, I've got this great house. It's a perfect house for a transferee who's coming in. You know, is there a way that we can work together to try and get this housing settled for your next, you know, people that you're pulling in? And maybe there's some original marketing that you can do that will elevate the house and the property for, you know, these people. You're helping them out. They need to find housing for
right.
executives, and you've got a perfect solution for them. So maybe there's something there. Maybe you need to get out and start talking to the Chamber of Commerce, some of the other people in the area, anybody in your development who or neighborhood who's got friends or relatives who are looking for a fantastic property, great opportunity. And then finally, you know, you have to decide if you only owe $139, I mean, drop the price to $150.
Yeah, and that's one of the possibilities. I was trying to make sure I could cover the realtor fees and those kinds of things, and I hate to lose that much of an investment, but at this point it might be necessary.
Well, remember, what's your carrying cost?
Yeah, the loan payment is $1,700 a month plus my utilities. So
you're really talking about $2,000 a month.
Yeah.
That's $24,000 a year carrying cost, plus
right.
the cost of keeping all that landscaping updated and everything else.
Right.
I mean, you've got some serious change in this property that as
yeah.
you continue to carry it, the insurance and the maintenance of it and the landscaping and all the rest, you continue to carry that, that's going to be a pretty penny. You are far better off dropping that price, getting rid of this house, and stopping the payments on it. Because wouldn't you just rather have an extra $24,000 a year to pay for the new house or the new property or whatever you're doing? I think the answer has got to be yes. 404-872-0750, 20 minutes past the hour in the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Glang. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Glang on News Talk WSB.
26 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. I got an email from Dylan. He said that we had a caller who was in Sandy Springs in a condo development on the river that has sewage weeping into the parking lot. Please have her call Sandy Springs at 770-730-5600 and inform code enforcement. They will get out there immediately and see the problem is corrected. I'm going to give that number again, 770-730-5600. Her, as you recall in from her our conversation, she couldn't get the building management to pay any attention to her. She felt because the building management was actually also on the board and nobody wanted to do anything. I suggested that she call the housing department, and sure enough, here's the number. So thank you very much, Dylan, for passing that along. We had another email from a listener who said that they love listening to the show, but I keep talking about free money in relationship to interest rates, and I keep saying that today's low interest rates are a lot like free money. But Jamie's point is, if you have to pay it back, then it's not free, right? So he says, if somebody gives me a $20,000 car and expects nothing in return, then it is a free car. If they give me the car and expect $20,000 back, it is not free. It's the same with mortgages. It's only free if I don't have to pay it back. My comment, Jamie, is that I think you're maybe missing the point a little bit. Yes, nobody's giving you a free house. What I'm suggesting is that compared to when I paid 11.75% interest on the money that I owe, paying 3.75% after which I get to write off some of that at my homeowner deductions is like paying very little more than 1.5% interest on the money. When you pay 1.5% interest and it allows you to borrow several hundred thousand dollars so you can buy a house, it is like having free money because you do have to pay the money back. It's not like I don't have to pay the money back for my house. What I don't have to pay is very much interest on that money. And compared to how much people used to pay, 3.75%, after which my net interest rate is less than 2%, feels like free money to me. So thanks so much for your input. 404-872-0750 is our number. We're going to come back and take more of your calls. I want to make sure we get through as many as we can. We've got Sean Hannity coming up at 5:05. He's going to be talking about the Casey Anthony verdict. And I have to tell you, when I was in the airport yesterday, You could hear a pin drop as they were getting ready to read the verdict. People were shocked, audibly shocked, that she got off. So you can hear more about that on Sean Hannity today on News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Glink on News Talk WSB.
35 minutes past the hour on the Clark Howard Show. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for joining us today. I will be back tomorrow as well, so make sure you set the dial 1 to 4 here on News Talk WSB. Online all the time. Think Glink.com. THINKGLINK.com. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. I'm at Glink. Or you can sign up for the free weekly newsletter on our website, thinkglink.com. All right, let's see if we can get some phone calls in before Sean Hannity turns up. Thomas joins us on the line from Gainesville. Hi, Thomas.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sure. What's on your mind?
I'm getting married in May.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And my fiance has about $80,000 of student loans.
That's pretty hefty.
Yes.
Is she working now or is she still in school?
She's starting tomorrow.
Okay. That you must be very happy about that.
Yes, I am.
Okay. And how much money will she be earning? Just as a, I mean, she's got $80,000 in debt, and what's her starting salary?
$50,000. Mm-hmm.
Terrific.
I should be bringing in about $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, should we buy a house when we get married?
Well, I think I'd really like to see you make a dent in some of these student loans first, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah, she's going. It's a year till we get married, so she's going to be paying off quite a bit. You know, with the housing market the way it is, should you know with
well, the housing market. Let me just reassure you: the housing market's not getting any better anytime soon.
Okay.
At least not in Georgia. Some other places, it's turned the corner a little bit. But I think if you're asking me if in a year you're going to still have, or 2 years, you're still going to have great housing deals available to you, I think the answer is yes.
Okay.
And once you start paying down some of that student loan debt, like what's the monthly payment on the student loans? Do you know approximately?
We're looking to do probably $900 a month, maybe $1,000.
And is it a 10-year payoff?
Or yeah, well, the minimum, I think, is $600.
Mm-hmm.
$700, but we're going to try and pay more.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. What you want to do is, if you're, let's say that the payment would be $600 a month, and let's say that with $80,000 in income, which is terrific, but I assume you don't have any cash to put down at the moment, right?
Right. Well, we got $5,000.
How much do you have?
$5,000.
Okay. Ideally, if you're going to buy, let's say, a $100,000 house, you'd really want to have $20,000.
Right.
Right? So, or even a little bit more than that. But you can buy a house with as little as, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 down. You might find an FHA house or a HUD home, which is an FHA foreclosure, where they only require a $1,000 down.
Okay.
So I think there are ways to look at buying a house, and you should certainly spend this next year looking for that.
Okay.
I would find an agent who really understands how to buy HUD homes, and you can look at the website HUDHomestore.com.
Okay.
And you can see the different HUD homes that are for sale in different neighborhoods. Go look at them. See the agents who represent those homes. See the agents who are actually helping buyers purchase those homes online, because you yourself can't make an offer, but a HUD-certified agent can.
Gotcha.
So I think you should spend this year learning and understanding and doing everything you can to get those student loans paid down as quickly as possible. Because even if you had $40,000 left, or you know, at the end of another year and a half, let's say you're paid down $30,000-$40,000, that means that when you go to qualify for a house, you actually are going to have more income available to you, and things will be a lot easier for you. And I would certainly love to see you get that loan paid off before you and your fiance start thinking about having kids.
Okay. Yeah, that's what we're planning. But so you say we should research this next year, and then the next year after we get married, we should find something.
I think so. I mean, it could be that in your research, you're going to stumble upon an amazing deal. You might find a house for $40,000, it's going to cost you a grand to move in. It's cheaper than anything you could rent. You could stay there with two babies, and it's in a perfect school district.
Gotcha.
If you call me back in 6 months and say, Elise, we found this amazing house. I think it's a win-win. What do you think? I'm going to tell you to go for it.
So what if we were to try save up 20% for a traditional loan?
Well, the traditional loans are nice because then you don't have to pay private mortgage insurance. And I'm sure you've heard some of the stories even today on the show about people who are getting into private mortgage insurance trouble. And private mortgage insurance is like paying an extra 0.5% per year.
Right.
It really adds up. For some people, it's, you know, a couple hundred bucks a month. And in my mind, that's just, it's good if it allows you to buy a house you couldn't have otherwise bought.
Right.
But it's not so good because that's a pretty high tax. Tax is the wrong word, but it's kind of a high tax to pay for not having saved up some money. But the HUD homes, there's literally like 40,000 homes for sale in Georgia.
Okay, oh,
maybe,
wow.
And maybe there's something to buy there. I mean, not all the investors can buy up all these homes. There's just too many of them. So maybe there's a deal there to be had where you can easily afford it. It's cheaper than renting. It's exactly what you're looking for. And maybe that's going to be the deal for you in about a year, year and a half.
Yeah.
And hopefully in that time, you've brought that $80,000, you know, dollar loan all the way down to maybe $30,000 or $40,000 or $50,000. You know, you've brought it down a significant chunk. And I know it can be done because one of the web producers who works for me, who's not making anywhere near $80,000 a year, had $80,000 in student loans and over the course of 2 years brought it down about $35,000.
Oh, wow.
And so it can be done if you are very focused on making that a priority.
Okay.
And you'll see, you know, you're getting married. I just don't want you to put too much pressure on yourselves because you're getting married. It's going to be expensive. You're going to go on a honeymoon. That's going to cost some money. You guys are going to figure out how to set up house together. All that stuff takes time and money. And if you're stressed about buying a home exactly at that time on top of everything else, it can be overwhelming for you.
Right.
And you should, guys should be working on your marriage.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, thanks for your advice.
You are very welcome. You know, I have on my website some information about buying HUD homes.
Okay.
And you can find it if you get a link to the store, the ThinkLink store, there's a podcast from one of our investing in foreclosure seminars.
Okay.
It really explains the whole HUD homes thing. And what you need to do. The woman who gave the seminar was absolutely fantastic. So there's information on there that you can look at. There's free information, and then you can buy the podcast for a couple of bucks if you want to.
Right.
But really understand what you want to do, and then go look at HUDHomestore.com because it's a great place to start.
Okay.
All right?
Thanks so much.
You're welcome. Call next year and let me know how it goes. I'd really like to see the progress you've made. 404-872-0750. Let's continue on with our calls. It is 43 minutes past the hour. Eleanor joins us on the line all the way from Virginia. Hi, Eleanor.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. What's on your mind today?
Actually, my husband and I are thinking about spending our winters in Florida.
Virginia's not quite warm enough, huh?
Not after this last winter.
I know, it's been very cold.
We went down and spent some time in the winter, and of course, you know, warmer is better, but we're going down again next month to see if we like summers in Florida.
Oh, I was just in Florida this weekend, and let me tell you about the summer in Florida. 98 degrees with 100% humidity.
Wasn't much better here.
Okay, then you're used to it.
Okay, but our thing is, even if we just want to spend winters,
uh-huh,
are we better off to buy, or are we better off to just rent?
Well, here's a question for you, because I think that one of the considerations you have to have is, where are you guys going to, you're already retired, right?
Yes.
Okay. You have to think about where you want your residency to be for tax purposes. So there's a lot of reasons people move to Florida to retire, and one of it is it's very, very friendly to seniors, and it's very friendly to estates. So if you buy a house or a condo and you live there at least 6 months, you can become a resident of the state of Florida. And you have to decide if that's what you want to do or not. If you don't want to change, if you don't want to change your residency, then just rent. You know, you might still buy, but you have to think about it.
Yeah, well, that was the tax thing or the advantages of financially that way wasn't really what I was concerned about. It was, you know, with the fact that if you are renting, you have no responsibility. You pay your rent and that's it. But mm-hmm. you only have whatever time that you're renting for, say 2 or 3 months that you decide to rent in the winter. That could cost you as much as $10,000.
Oh, yeah.
If you buy, the taxes and insurance will cost you less than $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
Because we have, okay, we are financially able to buy something cash up to $150,000.
Okay.
So, you know, am I better to take my money out of the bank, which is collecting like 1 to 1.5%, and buying something that maybe we could rent out when we weren't there? Is that a good business thought or not?
I think it's fine with some caveats. Number one, you do lose the opportunity cost of the capital. So even though it's earning 1% now, at some other point in time it might earn more than that. But it'll be locked into a house. Secondly, if you are going to live there for 6 months, you should definitely consider buying rather than renting. Because you're not going to want to move down with all your stuff for 6 months and then the next year lug it all back home to Virginia and then come down again and lug it all back down to somewhere else in Florida. If you are going to think about renting it out, then what you need to do is when you buy the place, take one of the deep closets, put a lock on it, and that becomes the owner's closet. And in there should go everything that you don't want stolen or ruined by your tenants, because that's pretty much what happens. I mean, I know people who have beautiful paintings on the walls. They were taken. They were never able to get, you know, they had them insured, but it wasn't for nearly as much as they were worth. You don't want to have your crystal and your china out. So mm-hmm. if you want all that stuff, you stick it in your locked closet, and then you just have the rest of it that's there from the tenants. So I think it's totally fine. I just think you have to think carefully about whether you want to be a landlord, whether if you buy in a community, they allow you to rent it out. If they do, if they help with that, if they charge for it, some communities do. And so, you know, to help defray some of the expenses, I understand that entirely. Maybe you have very low expectations for the cash, and it's really all about lifestyle. So I understand that as well. Then my last thought for you is find a place you're going to be happy for the next 5 to 10 years, because the market is so terrible in Florida that if you buy something, depending on where it is, it may take you a long time to sell it. And so I want you to buy something you're happy with. So I'd rather you test it out this winter, maybe renting in that community, or this summer by renting for a few weeks or a month in the community and see how you like it, and before making an offer anywhere.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So really, we'd be in no rush to buy this trip. If we saw something nice, go ahead and just wait and rent it out for rent for a couple of winters.
Yeah, I mean, or rent for a couple of months. You know, rent it for this winter, and if you like it, you can make an offer to purchase to the owner. They may be very interested in having that cash out and didn't think they'd ever be able to get it. You also aren't going to really know what homes are selling for until you're living there for a while and you're shopping it around. It's a very different thing from being in Virginia and setting up appointments and thinking you're going to go see everything. But when you live in a place and you're working with a broker and you're able to spend the time to really go and see different communities and start to understand what they offer, what they don't offer, you know, what the story is behind the scenes with these communities, I think it's a much higher level of understanding and you'll really get a sense of what you're buying into.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You are more than you're very welcome. I hope it works out well for you, Eleanor. It's 49 minutes past the hour. Our number 404-872-0750. Online all the time. ThinkGlink.com. Don't forget to stay tuned. We're going to have weather updates coming up. Kirk Mellish, our meteorologist, warns of some pop-up thunderstorms later this afternoon. You're going to want to stay tuned for updates from the WSB Storm Center at the top and half of each hour. And we've got Sean Hannity coming up next at 4. It is 4:50 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Klink. You're listening to AM 750, now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
This is Clark. I'm not here today, but you're still getting money-saving info from money expert and author Elise Klink on News Talk WSB.
56 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Fling sitting in for Clark. I'll be back tomorrow as well, which is very exciting. We've got Sean Hannity coming up next. News and traffic for your drive home beginning at 4. Eric Erickson's on at 7. Dave Ramsey's on at 10. And tomorrow morning, wake up to live team coverage of the top stories, plus traffic and weather every 6 minutes with Scott Slade and Atlantis Morning News, 5 to 8:30 on Atlanta's only 24-hour news, weather, and traffic station, AM 750, now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB. It is 56 minutes past the hour. Elijah joins us on the line from Covington. Hi, Elijah.
Hi there.
How can I help you today?
Yeah, I wonder if you could give me a number to where I could call and get some help for a modification.
Okay. Have you applied for a loan modification so far?
I did maybe about a year or so ago, and I went through the formalities of doing that, and they told me I qualified, and then within a year later, they called and told me they couldn't help me.
I see. Did they give you a reason for not qualifying?
I don't know, but they had told me I qualified and said my payment would be reduced, and then I don't know what happened.
All right. Well, that's happened
to me. But I was doing that kind of on my own, and I didn't have one to where they was helping me do this.
All right.
You know.
So let me give you a couple of places to go.
Okay.
You might want to go to the Hope for Homeowners Hotline.
Hope,
H-O-P-E. The number is 888, toll-free number.
995.
H-O-P-E.
H-O-P-E, okay.
Right. They are staffed by HUD-certified housing counselors.
Okay.
And they'll be able to get your lender on the phone to figure it out.
Okay.
Now, when you were turned down for a loan modification, what you could have done if you were one of the big lenders, you could have gone to helpwithmybank.gov. Help with
F-H-E-L-P.
My, yep. Help with my
bank. Bank.
Dot gov.
Dot
gov. G-O-V. Like okay. Government.
Okay.
And the big banks are regulated by the OCC, and that is their website, and you can go there and you can file an appeal. Anybody who gets turned down for a loan modification can file an appeal.
Yeah.
And then you get a case number, and then they follow up with you 3 months, a month, whatever it is. And you can do that while you call the Hope for Homeowners Hotline.
Okay. And you I'm not on the Internet. I'm not... I don't have a computer.
Okay. Well, then you're going to want to call Hope for Homeowners and work with them. But you're going to need access to a computer at some point in time through the process. And you're also going to need to have some paperwork. I'm sure they're going to ask you for plenty of paperwork as well. But that's a good place to start. Hope for Homeowners Hotline, 888-995-HOPE. 59 minutes past the hour. Our time is up, folks, but I'll be back tomorrow, 1 to 4, filling in for Clark. In the meantime, Sean Hannity is next. Enjoy your afternoon. He'll be talking about Casey Anthony and that shocking verdict yesterday.